man. Recipe Pizza!
Recipe Pizza. We've just recorded what was the reality TV show
Legends
called?
Legends House.
Legends House.
We have.
Mark was doing an impression of Tony Atlas.
I've never heard a line that I know. Every time I look at a banana, I'll just think of Tony Atlas. Saying,
he's thick as a banana.
My doctor said if I was one IQ point lower,
a banana.
I'd be a banana. Hey, welcome back to Wrestle Me. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas day. You are now in that period where nothing's going on. This is exactly what you need. You must be overjoyed to see this appear. And I've got even better news. We're going to be doing one of our rare forays into TNA.
TNA. I found a little clip of myself doing introductions on Challenge TV, and I introduced TNA for quite a while.
Did you?
And I found an old YouTube. But I'm clearly not across what this is. So I say, it's time for some grappling, I don't know what the fuck this is, before I watch a single wrestling match in my life.
10 years later, this man would have the nerve to charge people to hear his views on wrestling. TNA's a funny one for me. I mean, obviously...
It's all over the place, Mark.
It's been going on since 2002.
Yeah.
But it's a really funny thing in that, even though it was for a long time the only viable competition to the WWE, it's always seemed like a very hard promotion to love.
Mm.
And I think of other... You know, AEW, I'm a fan of. Ring of Honor, I'm a fan of.
Mm.
ECW, big fan of. TNA and Impact, I sort of go, yeah.
They seem to have they seem to have pots of money, and they seem to have a bit of razzle dazzle. They seem to kind of know what they're doing.
They do,
but it's just like
they don't
bizarre
limp along.
No,
but they're never quite actually getting a nice steady running speed. And it's funny because a lot of the people, obviously, that you know, they are made over the years. I mean. AJ Styles and Sting are probably the two people you'd associate mostly with TNA. Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, Hulk Hogan, Mick Foley, their own homegrown talent like James Storm. Somehow it's just, that's the bit of their careers that those people don't really mention.
Yeah.
Okay. TNA in all its existence has never quite had more than a handful of matches that you'd go, they're great.
Mm.
They're just there. Mm. But we're going to be looking all the way back to their very, very first pay-per-view. So when it first started, they pioneered a sort of schedule of weekly pay-per-views, and they pioneered it and also were the only people ever to do it. It didn't really work. But let's quickly just do a little bit of the backstory about how TNA appears.
Yeah.
So in 2001, Vince McMahon buys up WCW. Mm. And one of the things that he does is he goes on to Raw and he begins saying a list of names of people to see whether the WWE audience would like them to come over. It's a bit of a power flex on Vince's part. So when he says Sting, they all go, hey! And they go, Goldberg? And he goes, hey! And he goes, Jeff Jarrett? And the crowd goes, And he kind of goes, ha, ha, ha. Yep, no fucking Jeff Jarrett. Now, the reason he mentioned Jeff Jarrett and he wanted a negative reaction was because previously, a few years before, Jeff Jarrett had been the Intercontinental Champion. His contract had expired the night before a pay-per-view where he was going to face China.
Mm.
And nobody had noticed, apart from Jeff Jarrett, that his contract had ended. So he went to Vince and said, I don't want to re-sign, but I've got the Intercontinental belt, so if you want me to turn up tomorrow, we ought to talk about what sort of money I'm going to get. And it's believed that Jarrett got a huge amount of money that he basically had Vince over a barrel for. He then went out and did a very, very professional match with China where she won the Intercontinental belt for him, and off he went to a contract with WCW.
Mm.
Now, at the time, Jeff Jarrett was laughing about that. Hilarious, he must have thought. Well, he wasn't fucking laughing 3 years later when WCW went under and WWE became the only game in town. So, having seen that bit on Raw and knowing their history, Jeff Jarrett was very aware that he was not likely to suddenly start working with WWE at any time soon. So he went back home and he went fishing with his dad and a former WCW executive called Bob Ryder. Now, Jeff Jarrett's dad is a guy called Jerry Jarrett.
Mm.
Jerry Jarrett had been a big main event star in the Southern Territories who had moved into promoting. And he co-owned the CWA with Jerry Lawler. The CWA, Continental Wrestling Association, is better known as the territory Memphis. So everything that happened in Memphis with Jerry Lawler was basically co-promoted with Jerry Jarrett. So Jerry Jarrett has a background in professional wrestling. When things started going badly in Memphis, he was taken on as a consultant by the WWF and with WCW. So when the three men began talking about the landscape where WWE was the only game in town, Jerry Jarrett was a good hand as someone who might be able to come up with a viable alternative promotion that would work.
Yeah.
Bob Ryder, the guy from WCW, he suggested, why don't we do a weekly pay-per-view? Because what that would do is it meant they didn't have to have an injection of their own money with no way of recouping it. They weren't, you know, they were holding out for a TV deal. That's pretty much the only way wrestling promotions will survive. They need to be on regular TV. And they were aware that starting up, it might take a couple of years before they were able to get a TV deal. So they were looking at a way in the short term of being able to fund it without necessarily having to get into mountains of debt. So they decided they would do a weekly two-hour pay-per-view show. And the long and the short of it is it didn't really work. It was a hard pitch. They come up with the name TNA. That name was come up with by WCW's writer Vince Russo, who they'd consulted and who would do a lot of work with TNA in its early years. And the reason they chose it was because it sounded like TNA tits and arse.
Tits and arse, yeah.
They wanted to do that to basically say, this isn't your daddy's WWE.
Yeah.
They wanted to be a sort of more cutting-edge alternative to what the WWE were doing at that time. Edgier is what they were going for. Now, these shows all took place at the Tennessee State Fairground Sports Arena in Nashville, in Tennessee. Nashville, a traditional wrestling hotbed, and over the years, they'd lost all of their local wrestling. So it was a good place to choose it. The venue was renamed over the years for the shows, the TNA Asylum. Again, edgy, isn't
Asylum.
It?
Everyone, oh, wow.
You don't have to be mad to work here, but everyone else is, you know. Their basic thing was there is a lot of talent around who aren't with the WWE. So this is a fantastic time to be a promoter.
Scoop them up.
You've got loads of name talent that for one reason or another aren't with the WWE. Former ECW stars, former WCW stars. And with an eye on the future, they were also looking at the rise in independent wrestling. Ring of Honor has had its early shows in 2002. They are showing people at the main event like Samoa Joe, like AJ Styles, and like Christopher Daniels. And they kind of go, we can have a mix of older, established stars that have name recognition, along with the most exciting up-and-comers, and that will make us stand out from the pack. I ordered these shows when they were first on. They were very exciting when it started.
How did you sort of get that information, though, back then? Like, new things come in, not knowing how it was going to all be put together, that you pay that money down and you pay that money down. And
in this country, you couldn't do that. There was no way to access them. This is a long time before. Again, this wasn't available online.
Right.
You had to order through your pay-per-view provider. Well, we didn't have that in this country. The only alternative we had at that time was you would pay to watch it on Sky Sports 3 or you would watch it on Sky Movies. Yep. Well, TNA didn't have any
distribution.
No distribution in the UK. So what you had to do was you had to be interested in the world of tape trading and wrestling. You had to know someone and then they send the list around 2 weeks later and it would say TNA show pay-per-view 1.
Yeah.
And you'd get it on 3 VCDs.
Nice.
And you know, that was how I first discovered it. And I remember even at the time when I was getting it, from what I'd read online about the debut shows and the talent that was involved, I remember getting it and just going, this is not as good as I hoped it would be. It felt very, rather than being edgy, it felt misguided.
Yeah.
They were trying to set themselves up as a replacement for WCW. And what you got was this very badly lit, much too bright, very sort of cartoony looking world with a load of people who were given too much free rein that really weren't very good at it. A lot of people are given the mic in this show who go on and on and on without like pulling it in. And there are so many things. This show is so noisy. There's so much. Everyone's running everywhere. Someone will be talking and someone else will barge in and everything is just chaotic. And it feels like they've thrown too much into the pot and don't know what they are. You had all summer to work it out. Instead of like being an alternative that you get with things that you'd seen like Ring of Honor or ECW, what you get here is this weird sort of third rate sort of thing where they're going, you're going to be excited because look who's here, two NASCAR drivers.
I know. I mean, and that kind of really sort of pitched it to me. It was like, yeah, sexy South kind of like dirty boy kind of wrestling.
You have the Dupps, this sort of like Southern hick tag team. Yeah. You have the fucking Johnsons, who are two men dressed effectively as penises.
Yeah.
They are meant to look like penises. Yeah. You have disgusting commentators.
Which South Park did this. We've talked about it. South Park did this.
You have a country music star who comes out and sings a really aggressive 9/11 response song. The whole thing is really, really, really tacky.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Yeah.
Watching it back, I found it even worse.
If I was there at the time to watch it, I love that part of the world.
Mm.
But when you sort of step back and you look at it all, you do sort of go, ugh.
Yeah. This is 2002, Pete. I have a feeling like Muse were around in 2002. To try and give you some sense of historical context, this feels like something from the early 80s. It opens with Don West, who comes out. And Don West, he got a lot of stick in the early days because he was known from the Home Shopping Network, where he'd be flogging the worst sort of products.
Right.
And they brought him in as a pitch man. And he became a very beloved character in TNA, where he was famous for doing all of their merchandise stuff. And if you ordered merchandise, quite often you get a handwritten note from Don West. Again, making it seem not as professional as WWE. But they also bring out Ed Ferrara, who was in WCW as a writer, having been in the WWF. And he had portrayed a character in WCW called Oklahoma, which was a parody of Jim Ross.
Yeah.
And he comes out in this, and he is, without doubt, easily on my top three worst men of all time list. He's got white man dreadlocks, a two-third length school shooter, leather coat on, a sort of over-elaborate feather boaed shirt.
It's everything that was wrong back then when it comes to men who think they're it.
When someone says, "What is a douche?" Just picture what you think of when someone says, "The guy's a douche."
It's like,
and you go, "There he is."
If they put Guy Fieri in the Matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
Play that, basically.
The worst. They then cut to Mike Tenay, who is a brilliant commentator. Again, he is wearing a dinner jacket and bow tie, and that makes him look stupid because the other two
aren't wearing those things.
One's in a Hawaiian shirt, and the other one is, you know, the worst man alive. And again, that sort of is just like nobody sort of said, "Why don't we have a chat beforehand?"
It looks like the Eric Andre show. It's just like it looks like something we've seen before, but it's just a mess.
It really is. And they have a thing where what they're bringing back is the heritage of the NWA title. So TNA was called NWA TNA.
Yeah.
We've done some shows about it before, about the strange lineage of the NWA breaking away from WCW. Mm. And that happened in the early 90s. And since then, the NWA is still an organization that's going, but it has no home base.
Is that Billy Corgan's one?
It would become that, yeah.
So Billy Corgan was sort of giving it the big X about, he recently talked about like women don't work as main eventers or whatever.
That's right.
And then
he
put the title on
Tyrus. And then he's like essentially doing that thing of going, "Oh, I know you watch because, you know, I love liberal tears and all that." And I just go, I'm not going to give you a fucking penny. What happens with the NWA is they have a group of promoters who are trying to take this thing, which was once valuable, and make it mainstream again. Mm. And it's really suffered during the 90s. It's become a very small regional belt that's being held by no-name performers. And they look at this and go, "We could tie up with them and we can pay tribute to our heritage, the greatest lineage of any belt, up to the point where we split with WCW where it all went down." And what Tenay does is he sort of says, "We are going to be respecting history. We are also going to be making history this evening." And how they kick this show off, the first show of the alternative to WWE, is they bring out a load of stars from the past for a non-speaking sort of induction ceremony that goes on for nearly 40 fucking minutes.
What is that about? Why did they do that?
It's madness. They are trying to do that thing of going, "See, we are legitimate.
Yeah, we are legit. We've got history. We've got pedigree."
Yep.
But no.
Here comes Harley Race.
Yeah.
How he comes. He's not going to be wrestling, folks. Don't you worry.
Handsome Harley Race.
Handsome Harley Race. They bring out, they bring out, eventually, there's Bullet Bob Armstrong, who was big in the South, but they say he's the father of one of the greatest wrestling families of all time. That wrestling family includes Road Dogg, Brad Armstrong, who was a later Arachnoman, and Steve Armstrong of the Young Pistons.
Okay, good.
You'd argue greatest of all time. They bring out Dory Funk Jr., Jackie Fargo, who was a huge Southern performer, but not really well known on a national level, I think, to some degree.
And also the people who remember this wouldn't order this pay-per-view because it's just tits and arse.
Yeah, you look at the people in the audience and they are all people just going, "You're a fucking dude!" And there they are going, "Please welcome Corsica Joe and his wife Sarah Lee." Pete, you know I like wrestling, right?
Yeah.
You know I know a lot about wrestling. Even though, not even in 2002 when I watched this, when I watched this last week, I was like, I don't actually know who fucking Corsica Joe is. When I looked it up, right, there's not much to say about Corsica Joe.
Corsica Joe.
No idea why he's there. Never held the NWA title either. Right, okay, doesn't seem to be related to it. They finally bring out Ricky Steamboat, and he comes out with the NWA title.
Yeah.
And the commentators say it must be great for the Dragon to have that belt back in his hands again. Wasn't the belt he won. He won a different one, the big gold belt that we all know. That was an earlier one held by Harley Race and Dusty Rhodes. But out they come. Steamboat, good speaker. And he explains at this point that the NWA title, he says, it's like the Super Bowl to football players, the Stanley Cup for golfers, and winning Wimbledon for the tennis players.
Wimbledon. Good old Wimbledon.
It's like, do you know what this belt's like? It's like Wimbledon. Oh, yeah. It sounds very special.
Tag team with Corsica Joe. And the way this thing is, like, in the middle of all this, Jeff Jarrett comes out and calls the whole thing a sham.
He does.
And they're going, What is this then?
He comes out and they say, we're going to have a gauntlet for the gold, where it's a battle royal and then the last two will fight. And Jeff Jarrett comes out and just goes, that is fucking crap. That is stupid booking. He says, garbage. You go, okay, well, Jackie Fargo grabs the mic and he says, kiss my ass. And then it's unintelligible. It's just too deep south. And I'm sort of like, why am I seeing Jackie Fargo get fucking over? We're not going to have a match with Jackie Fargo. Ken Shamrock comes out. And he is like, okay, he says, I do agree with you that the NWI title thing, this sucks. It's like, what are you all
why are
doing?
You doing this?
It's your first show, your first main event. And you're like, do you know the problem with this? It's fucking crap.
It's a piece of shit.
It's absolute bullshit. What is everyone doing? Then out comes Scott Hall from the crowd. Scott Hall, first show, they have said to him, do you know what would be good? Wear a business t-shirt for a strip club called Landing Strip, a Michigan gentleman's club.
Honestly, what is that? What, he's just sort of, it's like he's just turned up from the strip club.
Completely. Stinking of fucking beer and fags. And you will be pleased to know, Pete, that if you ever visit Romulus, Michigan, Landing Strip Club is still open.
Yes.
Would you like to hear a little bit about it?
Let's see some reviews.
Here are some reviews from Yelp.
Yes,
this is
lovely.
From Victoria V. I went there with my friends not too long ago and I got a dance from a very attractive girl. The dance was fine. She was fun to be with. I don't know what it is, but the VIP rooms absolutely smell horrid, like piss and BO. It literally made me uncomfortable. I wasn't able to enjoy my dance fully. The food, though, is amazing. And smells good.
Oh, good God.
Vic S. says, here's my review on it. I came in and off bat was told some girls are fully nude on stage, which was a lie. About saw a catfight on stage over a chick not taking turns on the cash. Bad thing is, the girl getting jived was the best looking one in the club out of 15 women. The food menu was cheap, but the webpage is very off-key.
The webpage.
And here's Randall. Kind of expensive. Very few of the girls could dance, and some of them needed to brush up on their hygiene. The three reviews.
Scott Hall. Of absolutely into Strip. That kind of stuff.
Amazing,
yeah,
huh?
Smashing.
We cut backstage after this. There is a woman talking to the original midget killer, who is Puppet the Psycho Dwarf. He says, midgets are the true stars of this country. Worth saying, we are probably about 40 minutes in now and we have seen no wrestling.
Everyone
is just shouting and talking. The introduction of performers of limited stature here again makes this feel not like an alternative. It makes it feel like really second rate, only because we haven't seen performers limited stature performing for a long time. And it adds to that sense of it being a bit farmyardy and carnival sort of thing, that having it in the Nashville, you know, state stockrooms, whatever it is, also sort of lends a bit of slight tack too. absolutely worth saying, when he comes out and has his match, the match that they have is probably the best match on the card. It's really enjoyable. But the first match that they kick off with is AJ Styles, Low-Ki, and Jerry Lynn versus the Flying Elvises, who are Jorge Estrada, Sonny Siaki, and Jimmy Yang.
We've seen two of those men wrestle together.
We have. We have. We've seen Low-Ki and Jimmy Yang together only this year. AJ Styles, and I think we've both seen in WWE stuff. Yeah. Oh, WrestleMania, of course, yeah. So, yeah, 50% of them we've seen this year. It's not bad considering this is going back now 21 years.
I was very excited by Jimmy Yang. I was like, what's this guy all about?
You know it. He's always seemed a little bit like one who slipped between the cracks a bit, Jimmy Yang. He's they do mention, again, determined to shoot themselves in the foot. They go, oh, here are the Flying Elvises. The NWA legends really don't like this. They don't like it at all. What they've got is they've sort of gone, what would it be like if we had three honky-tonk men? And that is the answer to that is, I mean, it'd be better than one, it turns out. AJ Styles was, from this point on, a key player in TNA. He's made his sort of, if you like, national debuts in Ring of Honor, which is done really, really well on videotape, in the same way that Low-Ki would make his name in around the same time. Mm. And the two of them have been brought in. What is amazing is they make the decision to have them lose to the Flying Elvises. This silly gimmick where everyone's pretending to be an Elvis.
Yeah.
Within there is Sonny Siaki, sort of interesting guy, an American Samoan performer. He had signed a developmental deal with WCW, which was something AJ Styles had done as well. But his career, it just never clicked. He's one of those guys who seemed to be on the verge of something and then it never happened. He's almost like one of the first Rock clones.
Right.
He had a lot of Rock about him, you know, his arrogance, his build, even the way that he performed. He was signed to a WWE developmental deal between 2005 and 2007, but he never made it out of developmental. He ultimately left wrestling when he donated a kidney to his brother, and then he retired. He is still around, Sonny Siaki. He looks like he's in shape. God bless him.
Yeah.
If he's out there, ring in. Ring in, Sonny. I'd like to chat to you. This is their X Division, which was one of the things that TNA set up in an attempt to differentiate themselves from WWE, which was going to be about younger performers, smaller performers, and much more exciting matches. And it was a key thing that the limited amount of popularity that TNA had in its early years was all pretty much centered on the X Division, the high-flying, the exciting matches. We go to the second match. It's what they bill as a midget match. It's Hollywood versus T.O. the Midget Killer. We're told that T.O. stands for Totally Outstanding. Not how it works. And both of them are hip-hop urban sort of dwarves.
Chaps,
from the South. Mm. They do have a match that is incredibly fun. Mm. It's really, really pacey. And they are giving it their all. Even though it does feel like an anachronism on a show that is saying we are the new alternative, they actually more than live up to any expectations you might have had. They didn't use them going forward particularly. I think there's another couple of pay-per-views they're on, and then they do get phased out. Mm. Ed Ferrara does a thing about them being ladies' men, and he sort of goes, well, they're the right height. And I thought, I hate that fucking stuff. Is so much.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense, really.
Well, he's sort of going, oh, yeah, you know, they're groin height, aren't they?
Oh,
you
right, know. Okay. I think that women are shorter than men. I just...
They're about the right height because women are shorter
three
than
foot
men.
Five.
Yes. We then get this horrible sexist fucking bullshit of this sort of what's called lingerie battle royal
building up to. Oh, yes, I forgot about that.
That's pretty much the only thing they bill for next time because they think that's the thing that's going to sell the pay-per-view.
Right.
The idea that, you know, in the era of internet pornography, you would be excited by seeing Francine from ECW in some underwear, which, let me tell you, you've done for the last 5 years because that was basically her shtick.
Her clothes, yeah.
Yeah. It's the people they've got here as well are a mix of performers you've heard of, and then people who are making their one wrestling appearance. In amongst them is a woman called Alexis Lerae, Alexis Lerae,
right?
Who would later become better known as Mickey James.
Oh,
and she is in there, and she looks absolutely like a child version of herself. It seems illegal that she should be there. It's all a bit fucking Handmaid's Tale commander commentary on this, where it's just gross and weird. There's a funny bit where Elektra, who was in the last days of ECW, accuses Francine of bankrupting ECW. She says it's her fault, which is so like unbelievable, and you know, she's such a minor player. It's a bit like accusing someone of 9/11 and then sort of going, oh, the audience didn't really go for that. No, they didn't. Francine was not in charge of 9/11. You know, it's too much.
At one point, the commentator says, I think one of them's called Alicia, the women that are cavorting around, and they go, that is stunning. That
fucking hell. Jesus. It's gross. They talk about, you know, let's have a sneak peek for next week so you can get an eyeful. And it's all just like, you know, this is the alternative, is it? The alternative is Jim Davidson's Boobs in the Wood.
Oh, yes.
You know, fucking hell. He would, yeah, alternative to the fucking lefty shit you get on BBC One. You want to come and see some real comedy, mate. The women are, there's a woman interviewer called Goldilocks. And yes, she is backstage with a guy called Mortimer Plumtree. He's glasses and a cricket bat.
Yeah, sort of
which
a public
is,
school kind of kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Only one thing interesting about him, he didn't really have much of a wrestling career. But in 1996, he would appear in a nationally televised short-lived wrestling promotion called the AWF, the American Wrestling Federation. He was given the guise of Aloysius Hayes because they were kayfabing that he was the nephew of the AWF commentator, Lord Alfred Hayes. So he would become Aloysius Hayes.
Nice.
A little side note in my ongoing obsession with the world's greatest wrestler. They introduced the Johnsons. These are two guys called the Shane Twins, who would later have a short run in WWE as Jim and I, who were the tag team owned by a personal trainer called Simon Dean. Even talking about it makes me feel tired and no longer want to do this show.
Yeah. Then the NASCAR cars come out.
Oh, God. I mean, the whole thing is just, this is as bad a two-hour show as you could ever spend your time watching. The funny thing is, I suppose when they started, WWE must have panicked, and they would have watched this, and they'd have gone, guys, do not worry.
Joseph Mel, do you want to borrow a ring? Do you want to help? Fucking go ahead, lads. Do you want some cameras?
These guys, I mean, there's the NASCAR guys come out. They are Sterling Marlin and Hermie Sadler. You'll know him, of course. He is part of the famous Sadler racing family, we're told. They asked them to do an interview, and the man just went to Virginia a couple of weeks ago. We're looking forward to getting out to California. Yep, got about a 100-point lead, get some more wins, try and get some more 5-minute leaps. And what the fuck am I watching? I paid $19.99.
George, your man bimble around talking about
NASCAR. Oh, my God. And out comes K-Crush.
Yes, this show just became an R-Truthers
this
show.
Is now you are now entering the R-Truth zone. Out comes Ron Killings. He is sick and tired of hearing about race car drivers. good man.
Yeah,
they make the decision because it's the South to immediately make it a racial angle.
Yeah, of course.
He has to talk about old K-Quick. My kind, he says, my kind don't race cars. They score touchdowns. They play basketball, he says.
My kind.
My
Lordy.
Fucking kind. Unbelievable. Hermie Sadler then says, how do you expect to be taken seriously when you dress like that? Which, again, very racist.
Yeah, and also, like, the rest, you just had some penises running around.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing is, R-Truth in fucking jeans.
Yeah.
How do you expect to be taken seriously like that? What? Oh, well, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Got ya. No, loud and clear,
Yeah.
Sorry, are they a bit too big for you?
A bit baggy, Yeah, a bit baggy.
Is it the bandana? Oh, you got a thing on the door, like Hulk Hogan's Beach Club, that says no bandanas. You know, basically, it's easier. Just take less time, less things to add on. Just say, no blacks allowed.
Yeah, because no Irish, no dogs.
Then there's no confusion about what you're trying to get at.
Yeah.
This is gross as well, because the crowd who are, they do seem to be 100% white. They are very much like, yes, we are white, so therefore this makes this guy a bad guy I can boo.
Yeah.
Because he is not like us. And
the NASCAR guys aren't even wrestlers. They've come here to do a wrestling show and they're cheering the NASCAR guys.
I know.
They're the outsiders.
Fucking disgraceful. And
in a place where black wrestlers have dominated, like they have been like main event acts.
It's 2002. We've all heard Muse, and we're still now going, this guy is different. Out comes Brian Christopher to stand up and protect the NASCAR drivers in a clear show of white unity with no other reason.
Yeah.
They then throw K-Quick out of the ring, the two of the scum. And Brian Christopher is the son of Jerry Lawler. And he was very much turning up to this show wearing his old WWE gear, where he was part of the tag team Too Cool with Scotty Too Hotty. He comes out and he goes, yo, 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 listen, you motherfucker mofo. He says, you want to come down here and pick on these guys? How about your kind come down and pick on my kind? And it seems like he's trying to pull it back from being racist.
Yeah.
But again, the your kind and my kind,
yeah,
it's just overtly racist. Awful. Considering he's Jerry Lawler's son, Brian Christopher did not seem to pick up any of Lawler's mic abilities. That he watched his dad the whole time and just went, I'm going to rebel. I'm going to be... I'm going to be dog shit on the mic. That'll teach you. Match number four, Christian York and Joey Matthews versus the Dupps, Pete.
I don't even remember this bit. Do I remember this bit?
The Dupps are the Southern Hillbilly Tag Team.
I thought it was the Ducks. I don't remember Ducks.
It's obviously the Dupps because it lends itself to hilarious wordplay comedy. they are, who are they? Bowed up and jacked up. They have a valet who's called Fluff. So she's fluffed up. It's basic, isn't it? It's basic.
Yeah. It's confusing to work backwards from.
It is. Stand Up would go on to have a better career as in WWE as Trevor Murdoch. He would put on some weight. And he is now part of the NWA that Billy Corgan runs.
Okay.
And he is he's a good performer. He's good in this as well. Mm. It's just that he's stuck in such a prelim tag team gimmick.
Mm.
The two guys had actually been signed to WWE Developmental before this, and they came to TNA. They even had a very, very brief run right at the end of ECW. An amazing period that you could, in basically 2 years, you could work for ECW, WWE, and TNA. Mm. And then that would never happen again because off ECW would go until it was owned by, you know, WWE again. But you get an impression suddenly that fracturing, there were lots of people at the tail end of these key promotions who are suddenly floating around.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say about this, Pete. It's just, it's what people who think wrestling is shit would hold up as exhibit one. It made me feel stupider for watching it, and I was angry. Now we get a country music contest with Toby Keith. Petey Pete. I look at Toby Keith's records, and they read like if you were trying to do a Christmas tie-in, like Not the 9 o'clock News book. If you were coming up with names for country music albums, all of them are. So the first one I liked was Honky Tonk University.
he is so famous and so rich and so successful in this sphere.
Should Have Been a Cowboy was the most played country song of the 90s.
Mm.
His 2006 album, White Trash With Money. 2007, Big Dog Daddy. 2013, Drinks After Work.
Good God.
And 2015, 35 MPH Town.
Jesus.
Twice as much as Islington. So I can't tell whether it's supposed to be exciting.
It's a slow one, yeah.
Is there no school in that town?
Don't they have kilometres out there? Was that miles? I can't remember.
We don't need kilometres like Europeans. We don't need schools like Europeans. What we have instead is terrifying post-9/11 songs. So this takes place in June 2002, so sort of 7-8 months after 9/11. And Toby Keith had written a song called Courtesy of the Red, White and Blue, brackets the Angry American. And that's the song that he performs here. He boasted he wrote it in 20 minutes. Never a boast.
No.
Never a boast.
Never a good thing.
This was, it referenced his dad, who was a United States Army veteran who died earlier in that year in a car accident. I mean, it just, a lot of things together. Some of the lyrics from it are so awful. Now this nation I love has fallen under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Horrific. And it was all about, you will be sorry.
Yeah.
You will be sorry. Easy to do when you're just singing in a fucking like hometown crowd with your little guitar, isn't it? But once you do know the song, it is quite bold that Jeff Jarrett just barges him out of the way and marches down to the ring. There was an element there of Jeff Jarrett being a bit like Borat, where I thought it was quite a bold move for someone doing a 9/11 song to just push him over and walk through. I was a little bit like, you know what, Jarrett, you're all right. This is the gauntlet for the gold match. And this basically, without this match, which runs for about 35 minutes, there is something like 16 or 17 minutes of wrestling in the previous hour and a half that we've watched. I mean, it's such an uneven show. Jarrett comes in at number one. In comes Buff Bagwell. Buff Bagwell, very much the other person the WWE did not employ. He's blamed in some ways for a main event he had with Booker T, which took place on Raw, is the reason Vince McMahon didn't run a parallel WCW and instead decided to eventually go with Raw and SmackDown.
Because he
thought it was so dog shit, he thought, there's no way I can sell WCW. Buff Bagwell is the man who destroyed WCW's chances. And now they're going, put him in our main event. Out he comes. There's Lash LaRue is the second person in, who was a very minor league player in the last days of WCW. Out he goes. You get Screaming Norman Smiley, who is Black Magic, he was known as. He was a guy from, I think, the Antilles, but he was a British performer. Worked his way up through World of Sport and again became a brilliant trainer. Did a lot of stuff in the early days of NXT. He is great. He's the first person who comes out with charisma. He's made his name in the last days of WCW as the Screaming Norman Smiley, the man who was terrified of hardcore wrestling but found himself the hardcore champion. When I saw him come in, I thought, there is something bold if you'd have ended this show and it had been Norman Smiley into the NWA champion. I think that would have been great. They've started doing a thing which WWE had never done before, which is they began going, why don't we bring in people from all over the world? So the next person in is a guy called Apollo, and he came from the IWA in Puerto Rico. TNA did become, over the years, because they were trying to look for new stars, they did, you know, pretty much try breaking big Mexican performers, and they would bring in people from all over. They'd also do things like a Kazuchika Okada, who is the big man in New Japan, probably the best wrestler in the world. You can argue it's Roman Reigns, but let's not get into that now. But Okada did some of his training early on as sort of basically enhancement talent in TNA.
Right.
So they were, with that sense of going, we don't have a lot of money, they were quite creative about who they brought in. And you see quite a lot of that in this match. You get Kay Crush comes in. In comes Slash with James Mitchell. Mitchell says, they sort of go, who is this guy? He's all covered in tattoos and he's dark and he's got those like milky white eye contacts in. And James Mitchell says, let's just say his interest is in the occult. His interest is in the occult. It's really apparent. He was a guy called Jamie D, and they mentioned that he's competed in the WWF. He was in a tag team called PG-13, and they were very much tertiary members of the Nation of Domination. I mean, it was, to say he competed in WWF is a bit like saying I was on Capital Radio. I was, but I mean, I wasn't the main part of it. As this goes on, it's amazing how many people come out and you go, they look just like wrestlers, but they don't seem like stars.
Yeah.
It's just depressing. A guy called Harry Del Rios comes out, who is a sort of budget Scott Steiner. He's even got the Superman logo on the back of his shorts. He's an interesting sort of footnote. He very briefly had a WWF tryout where they made him a wrestler called Fantasio, who was a magician with a painted mime's face. And he only had one recorded match. In that match, he defeated Tony DeVito by sneaking up from behind him and magically pulling his boxer shorts off his body, allowing him to pin him. And after the match, when referee Earl Hebner held his arm in the air, he also managed to remove Earl Hebner's trousers. There is something about...
Less a magician, more of a sex criminal.
There's a continual thing about going, I'm going to remove your boxers. And you going, is it a magic trick? And him going...
I'm just like a magician.
The important thing is, at the end of it, I'll have a pair of your pants in my pocket. Disgusting. Out comes Justice, who would be later known as Abyss, who was a key TNA star, who is now a producer in the WWE. You have Conan, the Mexican star, who is so over at this time. You forget what a big star he was. Rick Steiner comes out, the dog-faced gremlin. Very much getting into that period where he's going, I'm going to wear a t-shirt now.
Yes.
Because I don't care about this and I've slightly let myself go.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much looks like someone who runs a sort of a scrapyard. He looks tough, but he doesn't look like a pro athlete anymore.
No, he looks very heavy in the face. Drinking just does that. Everyone gets the sort of bloke,
if you saw him, you would go, I'm going to just take, can I take your number? Because I think in the next couple of months, I do need to hire some bouncers.
Yes.
And you'd be absolutely made up with that. You get Malice come out, it was known as The Wall in WCW. You can very much see they're picking up everyone the WWE has shown no interest in.
The Vampire Warrior Gangrel is
Gangrel, that is thrillingly exciting, isn't
it? Well, they do sort of say, like, it's Gangrel from WWF. Why does he get his past laid bare? Yeah. They do mention WWF, which is weird.
And they do with Scott Hall. When Scott Hall comes out, they say, recently released from WWE by mutual agreement. those last three words are very much not how it went
heavy
down.
Heavy lifting.
Very heavy. Heavy lifting. In comes, it's worth saying, by the way, in this, Scott Hall has really got his working shoes on.
Oh yeah,
it's almost like he's sort of going, I just want them to bite. Yeah. I want them to go, do you know what, you can come back every week.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He goes, well, I can tell you, next week I'm going to be off my fucking nut. Toby Keith comes in and he suplexes Jeff Jarrett. That is the biggest reaction in the entire show. He does hold him up in a vertical suplex.
Yeah, it's good.
Which is really impressive. Solid. And he does it very well. He is the angry American, they shout. And Scott Hall and he then chuck Jeff Jarrett out. Out Toby Keith goes. You get the rest. Wildcat Chris Harris and Crowbar, Steve Corino, Ken Shamrock and Brian Christopher. You do look at it and you sort of just go, there is no way this is going to come down to anyone other than like Ken Shamrock versus someone. There's Brian Christopher eliminates four people immediately. No point deciding he's going to be the guy. You don't need to put a spotlight on him. He is never going to be the person that carries. Imagine going, our big champion is the guy in WWE who couldn't even win the tag team belts and wasn't the most charismatic member of the tag team he was in. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
And finally, you get Scott Hall backdropped out by Malice. And Scott Hall takes an absolutely huge bump. Mm. Really thrilling to see him do that. They then go to the final match for the belt. It's the last two survivors, Ken Shamrock and Malice, with Ricky Steamboat as the special referee. And Shamrock has got sideburns at this point, which make him look like one of the Flying Elvises, which is annoying. You've seen them earlier because you sort of just go, oh, they're
get
obsessed
in there
with this. It's not much of a match, this.
No.
You get Shamrock puts a cross arm breaker on and Malice definitely taps because we're at the point where we haven't yet got the UFC influence of people tapping. And when they tap a lot, when you watch it now and they're going, I don't know if he's tapped. You go, he's fucking tapped.
He's tapped.
He's done it.
He's tapped.
Back then, that didn't count.
Right,
it's weird
okay.
to watch it now. There's a belly-to-belly suplex that ends with the pin, which doesn't seem a spectacular way to crown a new champion. Turns out, right at the start, Jarrett and Shamrock are right, this is all bullshit. This is absolutely bullshit. Out comes Jeff Jarrett. He gets aggressive. Jackie Fargo then runs down, says he's going to whip Jarrett's ass. And then out comes Scott Hall. Everyone running everywhere. Too many people coming in. Too much fucking movement. It's chaos. And we're out.
I mean, like a Mario level.
I just imagine everyone involved in this just went, I'm going to have to get to sleep for 3 days now. And then we'll come back and do it next week.
Jazz.
For most of its life, I mean, TNA would subsist at this level. It would have injections of cash and things. It would have purple periods where it went really, really well. But it was always a distant number two to WWE, even when there were only two promotions around. And at some point in the 2000s, it slipped behind Ring of Honor. Now it's very, very much further behind AEW. It's no longer competition to the WWE. But it is sort of incredible that for 21 years, it has been going. It's been putting stuff out every week.
Yeah.
It hasn't. You haven't turned on and the lights are all off and them going, we can't do it this week. They've managed to keep it going for 21 years. It does seem like one of those things that nobody involved with it has ever come out and gone, and I made all my money back. It just seems to be a slow drip, drip, drip of losing revenue. But as a first show, it is worth saying it's on YouTube. You can go and watch it there. I watched it on YouTube, Pete, and this is the most adverts I've ever seen on anything I've watched on YouTube. At one point, they were coming every 2 minutes. There was adverts for a flower shop and one for a type of quark that was advertised by Claire Richards from Steps with the key line, is it? She just went, it's so thick, it doesn't even come off the spoon. So fucking tawdry.
So many. Well, they've got to put the adverts in somehow, haven't they? You know, they've got to make the money back somehow.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely trying on that one. But that whole show is up on YouTube. And is it worth watching? Sort of. But, I mean, you know, I'd slightly sort of say, make sure you got some Advil near you. You know?
Race the end of the show with it.
Yeah, shocking stuff. So, look, that was TNA Pay-Per-View 1.
Yeah. I fancy watching another one. I do fancy watching. I want to know what it's all about. Because it's hard with the first one. People are panicking and go, just throw everything in the completely hot, sticky quark.
And the first year of it, I mean, you do get some key moments like the last ever TV match of Randy Savage and things like that. And I think, you know, there are some exciting things to go through. I'd remembered this first show as being much more coherent than it actually was. And I did think, I am looking forward to never watching this again.
Well, maybe your dream will come true. We'll never touch upon Impact, or it's Impact now, isn't it? I don't know.
I still call it tits and arse.
We'll be back next time for more Wrestle Memas fun. But in the meantime, enjoy the weird period between Christmas and New Year.
Enjoy it.
I believe that's where we've scheduled it. I've not had a look at the calendar.
No, I don't know either. But hey, look, enjoy your tits and arse.